Welcome to the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Pete. And today, given that this episode should be coming out here at the beginning, first 3rd of June-ish, we're going to look at some USA softball rules, particularly obstruction, strike zone, and appeals. So can we get into that rule book for the people who are getting ready for their summer seasons?
Yeah. So lots of fun USA softball stuff. Some differences. We'll talk about those. We'll post a link to the softball rules differences. We're not going to cover them here.
We have previous episodes talking about that.
So, but I do want to review a couple of things because obstruction is a something that seems to be a moving target sometimes for us umpires. And so in USA softball, Pete, do you have the actual verbiage up on the screen?
So I've got here, it's on, well, in this case, I'm in the rules supplement portion right now, actually, but this should be correct as well. So reading from the rules supplement, and then I'll circle back. Obstruction is the act of a fielder, A, not in possession of the ball, or B, not in the act of fielding a batted ball, which impedes the progress of a batter runner or runner who is legally running the bases. And then it's got some supplements. So I think that's the quote out of the definition section.
It is.
In section at the beginning. And it says, it is obstruction if a defensive player is blocking the base or base path without the ball and the runner or batter runner is impeded. In past years, coaches taught their players to block the base, catch the ball, and make the tag. Now defensive players must catch the ball, block the base, and then make the tag in that order. So there's a little order switchy. Whenever obstruction occurs, whether play or not is being made on the runner, the umpire should declare obstruction, signal a delayed dead ball. The ball remains live. If the obstructed runner is put out prior to reaching the base, they would have reached had obstruction not occurred. A dead ball is called, and the obstructed runner and all other runners affected by the obstruction shall be awarded the bases they would have reached in the umpire's judgment had obstruction not occurred.
Yep. Yeah, so that part's fine. I think the most important piece to that was early in the paragraph, maybe even in the first sentence, there's a big and in there. So we have the defense's actions about blocking the base path or blocking the base or that kind of thing without the ball. And what's after the and?
There's no and.
Yeah, there is an and.
Oh, then my part is not the actual rule.
No, you had it. No, you said it. You said, and...
It says, not in the act of fielding a ball, which impedes the progress of the batter.
Oh, so there is no and. You're absolutely correct.
Hey, you're not going to bleep. You can't bleep swear in German.
Oh, I can't? I thought I could swear, and as long as it wasn't in English. I'm going to get bleeped. I'm going to get bleeped for saying... Oh, I did it again. Okay, so which impedes the runner? That's the important piece that I was trying to draw some attention to. Just the act of blocking the base path is not obstruction. I did this myself my first year of umpiring on the field with a very experienced umpire behind the plate, and I'm watching the shortstop run over and block the base for the girl who was leading off between second and third, and the shortstop every single pitch was coming over and getting in the way, and so I'm throwing the arm out. I've got obstruction going on here. Well, the runner was just walking back to the bag and watching the catcher. Never slowed, never did anything different. You know, by the time she got to the bag, the shortstop got out of her way, you know, all that stuff. But I'm throwing this thing out there like an idiot, right? And my the plate umpire in between innings says, what do you got out there? And I said, well, I got obstruction because, you know, she's blocking the base out there. And she's like, no, stop doing that. And so we talked about it after. And I'm like, yeah, there's more to it than just blocking. So NCAA brought some of that in, you know, a couple of years ago and said, well, if she sets up here blocking, it's obstruction unless something happens. It's like, yeah, I don't know. We took all that stuff out. That's gone. And now we're talking about USA softball. Just the act of blocking the base path or the base is not obstruction unless it impedes the progress of the
rule. So I actually jumped back to the definition section. It is worded slightly differently. So the rule supplement had it, which encompasses it. But this says, so obstruction is the act of a defensive team member, A, who hinders or impedes a batter from striking or hitting a pitch ball. So that's, you know, catchery, usually kind of stuff. B, who impedes the progress of a runner or batter runner who is legally running the base unless the fielder is, one, in possession of the ball, two, in the act of fielding a batted ball. And then the note that wasn't included originally, what I read, contact is not necessary to impede the progress of a batter runner or runner.
Right.
So that's also, it's good to know. Because a lot of times in the summer, you got different coaches. You don't have, a lot of times the high school coaches, they're professional coaches, quote unquote, they are paid by definition professional coaches. And a lot of times in summer, depending on the levels you're working, some of those coaches might be paid, but it's a lot of volunteers. And you have a lot of varying skill levels and knowledge levels of the coaches and experience levels of the coaches. They might say something like, Oh, she didn't commit obstruction. She didn't hit her. She didn't bump her. There's no contact. Yeah. Right.
Yep. They don't have to touch. But the fact that they touched is probably a pretty good indicator that there was obstruction or interference. Because the same thing's true on the interference side too, just on the opposite. Yeah.
Right.
The opposite flip. So when somebody says, no, they didn't touch, that's not the rule. But if they did touch, you probably should be looking for obstruction or interference. And how do you know the difference between the two, Pete? Obstruction and interference.
Well, in softball, obstruction is committed by the defense and interference is committed by the offense.
That's right. So you can't have interference on the batter runner unless the defense is actually interfere with the person making a play on the batter.
Mm-hmm.
One protected fielder.
One per play.
Yeah, per play. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so that's obstruction. Should be clear, you know, if it's different than high school, if it's different than NC2A, what you have to remember for USA softball is it's the impede the runner. It's back to this common sense. The defense did something to impede the progress of the runner and they didn't have the ball. If that happened, it's obstruction.
And again, just because they're standing there does not mean it was impeded. You need to look. Don't just look at where the fielder's standing. See that runner.
Watch them
do something that they would not have done.
Yeah. Slow up, change their direction. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jump up in the air over top of the.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. Right. Watch out for lower their shoulder because we have a different problem.
Yeah.
You know, if we got that happening. But yeah. So back to a common sense. Yep. You can't do that. You don't have the ball.
Even with a lower shoulder, you have obstruction and then you have malicious contact, right, which canceled the obstruction.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. For
you're
sure.
You're out there throwing gang signs at that point. You're just like bang, bang, bang.
Yes.
Signs everywhere.
Signs are going. Okay, so what else? So what do we talk about? Let's see. Transitioning from NCAA to USA softball, we should talk about the strike zone.
Yeah. So we've got here the space over any part of home plate when a batter assumes a natural batting stance adjacent to home plate. And in fast pitch, which is the one we care about, it's between the batter's armpits and the top of the knees.
Interesting. So armpits and top of the knees.
Yeah, so not front armpit as it kind of says in NFHS.
Right. It's armpits.
Yeah. And so if a lot of batters, when they load, will put their back one slightly higher than their front one.
Yep.
Right. You wouldn't go the other way. That'd be terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be bad. Sorry.
I mean, a lot of times you'll be squared up and it is a slight difference, but it's something to consider about. And it does say, so we'd have to get into what actually causes a strike as far as the any part of the ball piece, because that's not mentioned here in the definition of a strike zone.
Oh, the strike zone. Oh, okay. So yeah, what is a strike? Yeah, any part of the ball that passes through the strike zone, right? Yeah, so got it. So as Pete pulls that up, I do want to call out one of our listeners had made a comment somewhere, either on our social media or on the website, and they had just listened to our strike zone episode. So we had a very specific episode for strike zones, and they had indicated that they wished we had put a little more emphasis on the area over the plate part. So we did a lot with left and right, and we did a lot with up and down, but we didn't do a lot with over the plate. And so, and this matters to us here. If we watch for, let's say, we'll do two scenarios here. A batter gets in to sacrifice bunt. And so they're going to move all the way up in the box and they're going to turn sideways and they're going to squat a little bit differently than they do in their other, but they are their full body. These younger gals and sometimes just smaller folks are completely in front of the plate. And so the up and down of the strike zone matters about where their knees and their armpits are, but you have to move that area back to over the plate. So it may have crossed her knee in the front of the batter's box, but by the time it got to the plate, it was below her knee. Well, that is not a strike because the strike zone is over the plate, not where the batter is standing. So sorry we weren't crystal clear on that, but hopefully that clears it up.
Yeah. And so what we've got here, it's actually not, it doesn't really talk about that so much as the ball placement, as much as any part of the ball or things like that. So we have here's page 83 in the latest rule book, section 4, a strike on the batter. Fast pitch, for each legally pitched ball entering the strike zone, the effect is the ball remains live, runners may advance without liability put out, and strikes called on the batter. It just says entering the zone. There's nothing that gets more specific than that. I looked zone throughout the book.
Okay.
It does not get more.
So the ball entering the zone, you're going to get it from the clinic, there, and maybe, you know, we're just looking at the rule book. Maybe the manual or the maybe the case book or simplified plays or whatever somewhere. But definitely if you go to a clinic, you're going to hear any part of the ball. And now there's also the pictures sometimes that you'll see in umpire trainings that will have that the front armpits are as a ceiling. So the whole ball needs to pass under the front armpits, but the knees are any part of the ball. And then left and right is any part of the ball. So that's how you can tick the corner, right? The whole ball doesn't have to be over the plate. It's any part of the ball entering the strike zone. So, and I don't think we ever, did we ever get all the way landed on this idea of a ceiling and the whole ball has to be under it?
I mean, I think you said that was true for college, but in NFHS, the way the book writes, it's any part of the ball. So the ball could be 95% above the front armpit, but if the bottom part of the ball is below that, but just, I don't know that I've ever seen anyone call up there in a game really that was not high. A disaster.
Yeah, that's a really high strike. Interesting. So if anybody, you know, any of our experts want to please reach out to us and talk about that, or if you want to come on the show next time that we're doing some recording, you know, we can phone you in and let's have a conversation about the top of the strike zone and that the idea of an actual ceiling where the whole ball has to be. I know I've seen it in clinics. I just don't remember if it was a high school clinic or a USA clinic. I know I didn't see it in an NC2A clinic because it's, of course, it's a different upper level of the zone anyway. So, but anyway, the important part here is armpits to knees, not bottom of the sternum to knees. So strike zone is a little bigger this summer than it was for you NC2A umpires this spring. All right, Pete. So what else are we going to talk about? We're going to talk a little bit about appeals.
Appeals.
Is that right?
Yep.
So the types of appeals. And so... Yeah, well, I don't know how far we'll get in this because we're going to have to watch the time. There's a lot going on here. So types of appeals: missing a base, forward or backward, or touching the white portion only of the double base when a play is being made on the batter runner at first base. The exception is a play from foul territory or an errant or missed throw pulling the defensive player into foul territory. So we should probably talk a little bit about the double first base and who has to use what. And so in USA softball, with a double first base, the batter runner has to use the safety bag on a play if somebody's making a play on you at first base, unless that play is coming from foul territory. So if you touch the white bag, let's say that you've hit a ground ball to the shortstop and you bust your little butt down to first base and the throw is coming from, that's going to be a 6-3 play. We'll see if they get you. And you touch the white bag and run through, but beat the throw. The defense can say, I appeal. Batter runner missed the safety bag. They only touched the white bag. And if the umpire was watching, hopefully he was or she, you will be called out on appeal.
Yep. And so it's not only the play from foul territory, but if an errant or missed throw pulls them into foul. So think about the goal here was safety. If a throw is leading them, so the defender is like standing over by the colored portion because they get pulled that way, you can take the white one as the avoidance factor.
Avoidance factor. I like it. Yeah. Avoiding a collision and being safe is the thing. Yep. Thanks for that clarification, Pete. So another type is leaving a base on a caught fly ball before the ball is first touched. Important distinction there. First touch, not caught. So sometimes there's a bobble in the outfield, and I've had people try to make this argument before. Oh, she left early. The ball wasn't even caught yet. It's like, yeah, but
not the rule.
Yeah, that's not how the rule works. It doesn't have to be caught. It just has to be touched first. What about a line drive that goes over the second baseman's head and she jumped, you know, and she didn't quite have the ups that she needed and she tipped it?
Mm-hmm.
When can I leave the base? Right now. I can leave right now. So the third one is attempting to advance to second base after making a turn at first base.
So that one's big too. A lot of people get tripped up on that, is which way do you turn? What did you do? If you did not attempt to advance to second, you can return to first at your own safety. Don't worry about that, because that's really the key, is was there an attempt to advance? That's right. That's when you can appeal that.
Yeah, the old baseball stuff, right? After you touch first base, turn right, you can't go to second, turn left, you have to,
yeah,
you know, type thing. And it's like, nope, that's not true. It's not a bad thing to teach. If you're teaching 10-year-olds how to run bases, it's not a bad thing to teach to say, run through. That means I'm going to come down here and turn right a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, take a look, I'm going to go turn left a little bit. But actually turning left and then not going, you know, you can get in trouble for that. And then four is batting out of order is the fourth type of appeal. And then this is the part I want to talk about mostly, Pete. So live ball appeals and dead ball appeals.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So a live ball appeal. In all games, an appeal may be made during a live ball by any fielder in possession of the ball touching the base missed or left too soon on a caught fly ball, or by tagging the runner committing the violation if they're still on the playing field. Live ball appeal. This is the ball has not been returned to the pitcher We are still playing. We can do a live ball appeal by touching the base.
Mm-hmm.
You have to let the umpire know that you're doing it. You have to say, she missed this bag, touch it, boom. You can't just assume that they're paying attention to that and you swipe the bag and try to make the throw at home for the girl who's advancing to third base, mm-hmm. you know, or I'm sorry, to home plate from third base. So you're trying to get the double play. So I'm going to get the appeal here because I'm going to step on this bag because she left early and then throw it to home. You're going to have to make sure that umpire knows that you're appealing because it's still an appeal, right? It's not a play. It's still an appeal and you have to tell them it's an appeal.
Right, because it may not be obvious. If you reach over and people put tags on players that are just standing on bases all the time. There's people that do that just kind of out of habit. They walk by and they'll just tag them on their arm on the way by.
Mm-hmm.
Was that an appeal? Or what were you doing?
Right. What are you doing there? So make sure that the umpire knows that you're appealing. Then there's the dead ball appeal. And the dead ball appeal may be made once all runners have completed their advancement and time has been called. Runners must be given ample opportunity in the umpire's judgment to complete their base running responsibilities. Any coach or infielder with or without the ball may make a verbal appeal on a runner missing a base or leaving a base too soon on a caught fly ball. The pitcher and the catcher are considered infielders for the appeal process. The appropriate umpire should then make a decision on the play. Love this, love this, love this. Coaches, if you're listening, please pay attention. Any coach or infielder with or without the ball may make a verbal appeal on a runner missing a base or leaving a base too soon on a caught fly ball. Pet peeve, huge pet peeve, plays over. The dugout or the grandstands are yelling, she missed second base. Throw the ball to two. Throw the ball to two.
Mm-hmm.
Go get on second.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Stop. Just say, hey, Blue, I appeal. She missed second base. She sure did. She's out. Boom. It's that easy, dude. Do not throw the ball around. Don't. What are you doing? This is a dead ball appeal. The ball's dead. All you have to do is ask. None of this other crazy stuff. Nobody screaming at anybody. Nobody telling people to go cover bases or throw the ball here, throw the ball there. I got a runner throwing it, standing at third. You throw the ball to second base, I'm sending her.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look out. The ball's no longer in the circle because you're trying to do a live ball appeal in a dead ball situation. So you just made the ball live again.
Correct.
And now that the ball's live again, that runner can run from third. Please don't do that. Just, oh boy, pet peeve. You can't tell, can you, Pete?
Nope. You seem very, very calm.
Right. All right. So number two under there, when a ball goes out of play, runners must be given the opportunity to complete their base running responsibilities before the dead ball appeal can be made. And so ball's out of play, you know, it's like, yep, out of play. You got two bases from the time of the throw, the one you were headed to, plus one type thing. And it's like, well, shoot, they missed second, but they haven't quite got to third yet and they're not stopped. They go, hold on, I'm gonna trot back and get second. You know, the coach can yell at her, hey, mm-hmm. go back and touch two, hurry up.
Yeah.
But if she's over there standing on third and okay, she's not moving, she's done. Now the dead ball appeal can come into play. What is D? So we've had types, live, dead, and then D.
Pete, what so may not return. When can the people not fix their problem, their mistake? A runner may not return to touch a base missed or when left too soon on a caught fly ball, they mean touched fly ball, if one, they have left the field of play, two, a following runner has scored, or three, once a runner advances to and passes the next base awarded. So there you go. So it means if you've...
Ooh.
What?
I have a problem, I think. So there's a note here. So let's read the note before I confirm that I have a problem. So a dead ball should be called and all runners given the opportunity to complete their bases. Their base running responsibilities, returning to touch a base missed or one left too soon, must occur prior to an award. Therefore, on an overthrow, the umpire should hesitate in making the award while watching what the runner does. If the runner shows no intention of returning to touch a base missed or retag a base left too soon, then the umpire should make the award. Once the umpire awards bases, and if a runner reaches the first base of the award and then for any reason retreats to a previous base missed, that's an illegal act. The defense may appeal and the umpire should rule the runner out. Nope, I still have a problem.
No, so what it's saying is once a runner advances to and passes the next base, awarded. So it's not. It wasn't his base. So it wasn't that in the course of their normal base running, they ran and touched third and advanced. And he said, no, go back. And so the umpire, in the act, the umpire goes, no, you go home because you get third, you were going, plus the base on the overthrow. You get home. Home is the award in this case. They can run back, touch third, run back, go get second, come back around, get third again, and then go home to complete their award. That's fine. That's what they want. But if they if they're at third, so they ground, they miss second, they go to third, the award is given. The umpire says you get, you know, you're third, you're going, and plus home for the award. They go touch home plate. They cannot then go back and touch third and touch second.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I don't have a problem anymore. Whew. Thanks, Pete.
Yeah, I was worried too, because I actually had the same alarm, and then I like just looked and looked and looked, and I'm like, what could they possibly mean? Assuming that they were smarter than me, what did they actually mean?
Right.
And then I figured it out.
So when appeals must be made, so before the next pitch, either a legal or illegal pitch, by the way, which I think is interesting that they clarify that, but I mean, I get it, but it's like, no, it's a pitch. I didn't say legal pitch.
Right? Yeah, well, even then, you could do an illegal pitch without delivering a pitch. What if, what you did was like you did something and you dropped the ball and it like rolled somewhere. It's not really
okay.
Pitch per se, you know, so it's,
I got
I don't
you.
Know. They're just being good about it.
Okay. I got you. And so that's before the next pitch, legal or illegal, or at the end of an inning before the pitcher and all infielders have left fair territory on their way to the bench or dugout. So yeah, once everybody's left the field, you can't do it anymore. And that's fair territory, not the field itself, because they won't leave the field for a while. They're going to stand there and get their batting instructions or, hey, great job on defense. Yeah, frozen ropes. So before the next pitch or at the end, before everybody leaves the field to play.
Yeah, and then on the last play of the game, an appeal can be made up until the umpires leave the field to play.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, we talked about in a previous episode, in one of our scenarios, the umpires had something happen a little funny at the end of the game. They stood around, they waited, they gave the ample opportunity. None came, so they left.
Yep. And in F, we've actually already talked about this one. I should have read ahead. It's called advance, and it says runners may advance during a live ball appeal, which is what I just said. So if you turn your dead ball appeal into a live ball appeal, when the ball is live in fast pitch, each runner may leave their base when the pitcher no longer has possession of the ball within the pitcher circle, or if the pitcher makes a play on any runner, a fake throwing motion is considered a play. If timeout is requested for an appeal, the umpire should grant the timeout in fast pitch or slow pitch, and runners may not advance until the next pitch. So when somebody calls time, I have an appeal. It's really not a live ball appeal anymore. Now it's a dead ball appeal. So okay there, but love it. If that pitcher makes a play or throws the ball out of the circle for the purposes of an appeal, guess what? You can run. So Pete, there's a lot more here, and we've been going for a while, and I think we have a social media post we want to get to.
We do. So we'll come back, maybe revisit the rest of these a different time. So this one was, a runner walked and rounded first. So this is from NFHS softball umpires, but we'll address this kind of multiple ways here. From Mike Hurd. A runner walked and rounded first base and returned. No issue here. As she stepped back on first, she lost her balance and stepped off momentarily. Base ump called her out. As an umpire this myself, is to me, this is over-officiating. Your thoughts?
Over-officiating? No, I would not call that over-officiating. I would call that bad officiating, actually. So there's nothing illegal about that. And so first of all, understand the intent of the rules, what the umpire probably thought that he or she got her for was leaving the base after the look back rule had been done and everybody had completed their base running assignments. So leaving that base with the ball in the circle is not allowed. And so that's probably why he called her out. However, losing your balance and losing contact with the base is not leaving the base. And I think there's some words of wisdom from the rule book that actually help us with that, doesn't it, Pete?
Yep.
Yeah. We had it pulled up.
So one thing that, so Manny points in this actual post, he says, so he's quoting NFHS, but says Article 3 says, once the runner stops at a base for any reason, the runner will be declared out if the runner leaves the base. Losing contact with the base because the runner loses her balance, switches feet, jumps up and down with excitement, etc., isn't leaving the base. Leaving implies she's purposely moving with distance and direction away from the base. As my mentor once told me, umpire with the book, not by the book. Understand what the rule writers intended. So that is that. That's the NFHS one.
I thought we saw it in the rules supplement.
This in the rules supplement here on page 140 of this particular 2026, it says, once the runner returns or stops at a base for any reason, the runner is out if they leave that base. This is different than, so what I first stopped and looked at the rules, it mentions that the runner is out if they lose contact with the base, but that's on a live ball when the ball is being held to them. So in that case, so we're talking about, what if they fall down? What if they jump up and down? What if they stumble while they're trying to adjust their feet? If there's a fielder standing there with the ball in contact with the runner in their glove or in their hand in some way, and they're holding it on the runner, and the runner jumps in the air and the ball is in contact with them as they separate themselves physically from the base, they're out.
That's right.
But in the purposes of this look back rule or some other, which is the only time that this would then matter, contact with the base is even in play, as we're talking about the look back rule.
Right.
So you're saying once a runner stops, the runner's out. If they leave that base, the runner will not be declared out if there's a play made somewhere else. And so it's going on here to describe the things that cancel look back rule. So that's what we're talking about. And so in that case, like you said, leaving the base is not merely losing contact with it for the purposes of this look back rule.
Right.
For the purposes of the runner needs to be on their base when the pitch is delivered. If they're standing there and the people are doing whatever and she's adjusting her feet and temporarily no part of her body is in contact with the base, that's okay. She's allowed to adjust. She's allowed to stand differently. She's allowed to twist her ankle and stumble off the base. If there's no play being made on her, that's fine.
Right.
Don't over
officiate. Yeah, I mean, how many times, you know, do they spin around? They're going to do the rocker step, you know, so mm-hmm. the timing move that the runners sometimes make where they put their first step foot behind the bag, right? And so as I'm doing that, I may lose contact with the bag for just a second here while I switch my feet around, you know, that kind of thing. And we don't want them out there dancing like marionettes or anything, trying to make sure that there's always a toe on the bag. They're not leaving the bag. So I think that the umpire in this situation was wrong. Over umpiring, that's a stretch to call it that, because I think it's just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But also certainly interjected himself into the game when he shouldn't have, and that has been considered over umpiring. So yeah, so please don't do that.
Don't do it.
Yeah. Hey, I think that's what we have for today. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, until next time.